Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody. Good to be with you again. You're listening to another edition of the Game on Sunday podcast. Michael Lester here with you, and I am joined by Tomás Mulcahy, as usual. Now, at this time of the year, because obviously we don't have any big matches in terms of inter-county matches and so forth to talk about, we've had some great guests over the last few podcasts, and I'm thrilled that we have another great one on this particular podcast, who is Seamus Callan of Tipperary. And again, as I've said with a couple of other guests on the podcast, if you start going through the list of what they've achieved, you could be here half the day and all that. But we'll go through that later on, because essentially Seamus has won everything. Seamus, thank you for joining us. You're so good. It's good to have you on the podcast, obviously. In terms of, we'll begin at the end briefly and then come back to the beginning. Of course, you've decided to step down from inter-county hurling over the last couple of months after a great career, and congratulations on all of that. Was that a big decision? Of course it was, yes.
Yeah, look, I suppose it's it's a decision I had made at the start of the year when I decided to go back. I met with Lee Cahill and Mikey Beavens, I suppose, on the three different occasions at the start of 2023 about going back into the panel for the season just gone. So I suppose I was unsure, was I going to go back the year just gone? And after a couple of meetings with the guys, then I decided I'd give it a rattle for the year. And it was always the case that it was just going to be 1 year. So the decision was made back then, but I suppose, you know, you're always, throughout the year, I was fine with the decision. And then when you press the button to announce retirement, the memories really kind of flood back in and all that. And then it becomes a difficult thing to do. But I'd say the decision wasn't difficult.
I know what you mean. We were talking there recently, a couple of podcasts ago, to Richie Hogan, who, as you know, has been in the same situation as yourself. And also had to make that same kind of decision, you know. And I suppose for the two of you, you know, Seamus, for you and for Richie, etc., and so forth, it's great, I guess, to make that decision having won pretty much everything in inter-county hurling.
Yeah, look, I suppose I'm very lucky, to be honest, and the same as Richie. Richie, absolutely fantastic player, and we've had great duels throughout the years. But I suppose both of us can probably look at our careers and say, look, we've got the All-Irelands out of it, and, you know, a few personal accolades and different things like that. So, but I suppose when you're in there and you're in the setup, it's all a case of you want more, you know, and you don't actually reflect on what you have until it's over. And I suppose it was until I was getting kind of, when I announced my retirement and I was getting messages from a lot of people, you know, you actually kind of sit back and realize, you know, God, that was a great time in my life. And, you know, you did achieve a lot. And because just when you're in there, it's always what's next, you know, when's the next training session? What's the next thing that's happening? And you kind of don't come out of that bubble, but, and you don't really, I suppose I didn't leave that bubble that day until I actually announced my retirement. In a way, you know, you were still kind of present in that year. So it's just when I suppose you come out and you announce it, the nice messages come in, and I suppose they make you realize what you have achieved. And I suppose myself, and speak for Richie on this, like, he's achieved an awful lot as well. Like, so we've been part of two exceptional Tipperary and Kilkenny teams, which went to battle a lot throughout our careers anyway. But there were great times, you know. I've played, as I mentioned before, I played in 7 All-Ireland finals, and all 7 were against Richie. So they're all against Kilkenny. So just, I suppose, shows the times when we were playing in, you know, typically Kilkenny were very much up there all the time. So and it was great.
Moss, you understand this, obviously, as well as anybody else, with the top county, in your case, like Cork and so forth, and that, and you understand, like, the successes, but then I suppose, not the failures, the disappointments, if you like, you know, and all that. And I suppose every top-class hurler can go through that.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt, right? And look, great to have you on board, Seamus, today, and look, 3 All-Irelands, 4 All-Stars, 6 Munster titles. I mean, when you look back and what you've achieved, I mean, starting out, I'd say if we all got that kind of that hall of medals, we'd all been very, very, very happy. And also, and Michael, yeah, you take the disappointments, but it's what you come back. And like, for Seamus, I think Seamus, I mean, there was something stands out in my mind about you, right? And kind of just checking up, you had 40 goals scored in championship, I think 63 in the league in championship. You had a knife for goal. I mean, it was something that was always in your head when you got possession. If there was a green flag to be raised, you raised it. And if there was a guy in a better position, you always gave him the ball. And I liked you in terms of that pivotal role at number 14, your distribution, your vision. But this goal-getting ability was incredible.
Yeah, I suppose earlier on in my career, now I was still scoring goals earlier on in my career, but more so in the latter stages of it. But see, earlier on in your career, you're trying to, I suppose, cement your place, and you're trying to think, you know, I need to get a score here to survive the next 15, 20 minutes. You know, the tip line was so strong at the time. And but I suppose when I got more comfortable and felt, I wouldn't say comfortable, but just felt more established in my position within the team, you know, a pint nearly becomes like, it's kind of your second option. You know, I was always kind of say that, like, just test it out, go for goal, take a run at the man. And if it's not on at that stage, you can always turn back and take your pint, and that's fine. But I always wanted to have a go at the lad first and see what he was made of, kind of, and just see, could I go for the juggler, really? And that was always my attitude, I suppose, for the last 6-7 years of my career. And I was, in fairness with management, I was kind of afforded the license to do that and to express herself, and I always would have tried to, I suppose, get on to the younger guys as well, to just, you know, open up, have a run at the guys. Like, they can either bring you down or let you through, or, you know, some of them obviously can hold you in a tackle, but it's just have it, test them out, especially early in the game, and see what kind of you can get away with, really, I suppose, and what you can try for the rest of the match. But that all comes with a bit of experience and being probably settled in a team as well. As I said, you know, earlier on in my career, you might have tipped over a pint, where now I would have went for a goal, you know. So, but, you know, I did a lot of work with Eamon O'Shea through the years on goal scoring and just being comfortable around the square. I think that was a big change in my career when I got the number 14 jersey on my back, and just had the belief system around me that I was going to be pivotal to what Tipperary were doing going forward, and that was huge for me, and for my confidence. And then And I suppose, as I said, we did a lot of work around finishing and different types of finishes and strikes in around the goal scoring area. So it was always something I liked. Obviously, look, goals win matches, you hear, you know. So
yeah, they say that, goals win matches. Yeah. And
I always enjoyed scoring them. So
no, you did, and you scored a lot of them. Yeah. But as Michael said there, I suppose, look, we all remember the victories, but more on times, I think. Like I remember the ones we lost, Seamus, more than the ones I've won, right? You know, is that something kind of sticks in the back of your mind in terms of, Jesus, we should have won one or two more. We could have won one or two more. Yeah.
Look, I think we were unlucky not to have, you know, another two or three All-Irelands in the belt. I think the one that stands out to me most is probably the Galway match in the All-Ireland semi-final in 2015, where we lost by a point.
I'm glad you brought that up there now for the Galway boys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I just felt that year we had an unbelievable team. I just felt like we were the best team in the country at that time. I just felt that at the time, and obviously we didn't go on and win it. But that's one I kind of look back and say, you know, we probably might have left behind us. But you know, I suppose Liam Sheedy, when we won the 2010 All Ireland, you know, you would have liked to know what would have happened if he stayed on for two or three more years at that stage, you know.
But it's just an extraordinary thing, lads. And I put this to both of you, and from a point of view of conversation, and this is natural. This is sport. This is fans and so on. The last podcast that we did, Seamus, was with Cyril Farrell, which was hugely successful because there was a huge turn in for it. And Cyril Farrell, through his time in Galway, won three All-Irelands back in the 80s and that, which Galway hadn't won like since Adam was a small boy and all that kind of stuff. But I remember back in the day, people used to chat about it, and people say, they should have won more, you know. And you're saying to yourself, heck it, they won three in the 80s. Like, how many more do you want, you know? But isn't that sport, isn't that the crack with fans?
Look, it's great. Look, and you know, to get three, if you told me in, you know, maybe 2012 or 13 that I'd add another two to the one I had in 2010, I just wouldn't have believed you, you know. So it just, like, I'm hugely proud that I have three All-Ireland final medals. And I'm delighted with that. But, you know, I suppose when you go through, like, the highs and lows and the wins and the losses and everything, it all takes you back to what was the best part of it all. And the best part of it all was actually the journey. You know, whether you won or lost, the journey was the best part of the whole year. Because people will remember the Sunday in Croke Park or wherever it is. But the players remember the camaraderie from a January training session in Dr. Morris Park, or a training camp where you were really put to the pin of your collar and you wanted to give up 100 times during that training session, and you didn't, and everyone else was the same, and you pulled through. And then the nights out you had, and the crack you had together, getting to know each other, everyone from different clubs, like, it's the journey that completely, when I look back on it, people will say, do you know what, they'll read out the honours, the list of honours or whatever it is, but I just look at the journey and it makes you smile to yourself, because you just think, that was an amazing time in my life. I suppose surrounded by people you loved and people that were on the same mission, and there's nothing will beat, I suppose, being in a high performance environment and constantly testing yourself against the best in the county. Like, that's what I loved about it.
That's a very, very good point, Tomás, because I remember back in the day, back in the late 80s, early 90s, when Tip were also very successful back in those times, under Babs Keating and all that. And I would have been very friendly, Seamus, with Babs and all that crack at the time. And I remember on the two occasions in 1989, when Tip won the All-Ireland, and again in 1991, which they won again. On both occasions, Babs invited me and another mate of mine, Vincent Hogan from Nina, down on the bus and all that. And even though I'm not from Tip, Jesus Christ, we had the best crack. I never had better crack. Stop the life. And as you said, Seamus, it was about the characters, like, they were on that particular team, you know.
Didn't have that team in it,
I still remember some pictures of your list on the open tap bus. All right,
you have my full permission, Tomás, to delete any of those things going forward. By the way, yeah. And actual fact, Seamus, I must tell you this small side of what Tomás mentioned there a second ago. Going into Paris in 1991, in 1989, they had this big celebration up in Sepple Stadium. And there was a bit of, I won't say controversy, but debate about it afterwards because people were charged to go in to the stadium, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, 2 years later, they just did the simple thing. They just brought the Sam McGuire or the McCarthy, I beg your pardon, into the square and all that kind of stuff. But as I said to you, there was an open top bus with the team and all that. And I was sitting up the front with Babs. And when they were turning into the square, the shout was put up like by Babs and everybody else to bring the cup up to the top of the bus because there was a massive crowd there and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. But you know the way lads are a bit shy and a bit puck on each other and say, you go up with it and whatever. And myself and my mate Vincent decided, well, Jesus Christ, if nobody's going up with it, we'll go up, you know. So when the bus...
It was the nearest you got to the McCarthy Cup, Leicester.
The bus turned into the square, the two people holding the Liam McCarthy Cup up at the front of the... Well, at least one of them was from Tipperary. The other fellow was me. And I thought, Seamus, the whole thing was so emotional, I started crying.
Go ahead. There was some safe.
But there was the best thing.
I'd say you were after a couple of bottles of sherbet or milk or something at that stage.
Funnily enough, now, supplied by the Tipperary County Board now, in fairness. Yeah. But the best thing about it was there was actually a picture at the front of the Irish Times the following morning. And I remember looking... I saw the paper inside the shop and I said, if RTE sees this, I'm sacked, kind of, you know. But luckily, I had the cup in front of my face, so you didn't see who it was. But so anyway, apart from you, Seamus, I've actually brought the Liam McCarthy Cup down to Tipperary as well. So it was a huge achievement for me.
Seamus, could I ask you there? And I was lucky enough to work with Michael in terms of RTE television and radio for a good number of years. But you mentioned the journey. Take me back to 2010. And can you describe the journey back then? Because I think it was one of the greatest games I've seen, to be honest with you, right? And what was it like, I mean, to be involved in that from the early get-go, as you say, getting ready in the National League, getting ready for championship, and then to go and do what he did in 2010. I mean, that must give you some... The hair still standing up on the back of your head thinking about that one, I would think.
Yeah, no, definitely, because, as you know, like, Kilkenny at the time were going for five in a row.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Like, the amazing team, like, unbelievable. And there was a lot of... You know, we probably... Well, look, we started off the journey with Liam, I suppose, in 2008, and that was my first year, and Waterford beat us in the semi-final. But the following year, in 2009, we probably felt a little bit like there was an All-Ireland there for us. You know, Kilkenny beat us in the final, and we probably felt a bit... we missed a few chances, and I remember PJ Ryan pulled one out of the top corner on me, and another one, Owen, kind of slipped, and different things like that happened, and it just didn't happen for us. So the bit was really between the teeth for 2010 then, you know. So, but I remember, the pre-seasons are tough there, like, you know, we had Keane O'Neill with us there, and you know, Sheedy, like, there's to be no messing around there, like, you're really put to the pin of your collar, like, so, and every training session is, you know, designed to be harder than any match you'll ever play, like, so, it was, but it was a great buzz, because we had, now, obviously, we started off the year poorly, and we'd go through the qualifiers, we got beaten, and easily enough, down by Cork, so, in the first round. And after that, I remember Liam just talking in the dressing room and saying, look, you know, I think at the time, I think he said was, one of the things he said was, it was like the Green Day song, Wake Me Up When September Ends, you know. So it was kind of, that's one of the things he kind of said. And, you know, basically saying that, look, there's still a lot of Ireland to be done in this championship. And, you know, let's see where we are at that stage of the year. So it was, and look, we got through the qualifiers anyway, and I think a huge win for us that year was actually beating Galway in the quarter final. I remember was Ollie Canning went off a couple of minutes ago there. And
that's right, yeah. Yeah, Ollie went off, yeah.
And we finished really strong and got through that game, which gave us huge confidence then. And look, you know, everything I suppose went right for us then in 2010, then in the final against Kilkenny, like with Larry getting the hat-trick and all that. So, but the feeling, I remember I was a sub that day and I remember warming up when Noel McGrath got his goal. He kind of slid nearly and flicked the ball on his knees nearly into the net. And I remember just running up and down the sideline at that stage and the noise, like you just feel your body was tingling and you couldn't wait to get in there, you know. But every score was just, it was electric, like. And to go back to the celebrations after and everything, like, it was unbelievable. Like, you know, we went down to Mullaghone Wednesday and we were up in Portro on the Thursday and we were, you know, it's different times, you know. Like, we won the All-Ireland, say, in 19 there, like, and the celebrations were unbelievable as well. But, I don't know, back then, times were different and it wasn't as... I suppose,
I suppose you didn't have as many mobile phones back then, maybe, or you weren't exposed to so much media that you could let the hair down and enjoy it a bit. And
exactly, yeah, it wasn't being as documented or whatever, you know. But it was just it was a special time as well, because for that group, like, you know, there was a few lads that had All Ireland medals from 2001, but you know, that's a big gap for Tipperary Ireland from 2001 to 2010, really, you know, from where we'd expect to be. So
agreed.
It was huge, and it was huge for the county, and everyone really got behind that team, and I think. It was a kind of a thing with when Liam was over us, he kind of was the honesty of the group was always, it was never questioned. Like, so it was kind of a thing that the supporters would always get behind him because he knew, you know, that everyone was playing for him was going to have to be given everything, you know. So, but it was just a special time. God, when you look back at it now, like, it really was like, that was kind of a step as well for a lot of our group that came through after that, like, or well, it came through in 2009, but that was really the announced everyone's name.
Yeah, you really kind of set the tone realistically. I mean, the physicality in that game was, oh my god, the hits, it was incredible, Seamus. It was, I mean, your physical conditioning had to be incredible. Yeah
definitely, yeah, it was. But like, I just think Tip and Kilkenny matches, it's kind of a thing, there's no tactics involved when it comes to it. It's just, let's go at each other here now, you know, man for man, and see what happens. And that's what I loved about it. It never changed throughout the years with Tip and Kilkenny. There was never, it never went to structures or different things like that. It was just man for man. And I don't know, it's that kind of a thing, just we're both traditional counties, I suppose, and just want to just go at it, you know.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you came in, Seamus, into the setup, and you marked yourself out as an exceptional player, if I may say, like, from underage and so forth. But that was a very talented group. And you just mentioned it there earlier on that you were coming in too. So it wasn't an absolute gimme that you were going to get an automatic starting place all the time in the team. You had to work for your place, essentially.
I did, yeah. Like, I came in 2008 and, sure, look, I never dreamed I'd be in the panel. So, I kind of, like, to play for Tip was never, it was all, when you were younger, it was something you dreamed of. But, like, as I was 17 or 18 and 19, like, I genuinely thought I'd be I'd be playing club hurling at a good level for the rest of my life. I didn't think I was ever going to go on and have the career I had. Lean brought me in the winter of 2007, and I was fierce light, tall and skinny and very light. Gym programs and stuff that was my first year ever being in the gym. I think first year to hurling were probably in the gym. We worked fierce hard and I got my breakthrough I got a few matches in the league just coming on, kind of maybe 15 minutes here and there. And he let me in then to start the first round of the championship against Cork down in Cork. And we got a win that day, and I came away with 3 points from centre forward. And that kind of announced me onto the scene, I suppose. And I had a good year that year, and I was nominated for an All-Star that year. And then 2009, the same, a good year again. But 10, I lost my place after the Cork game, after the first round. I remember Bonner Maher started ahead of me then for the Wexford match in the qualifiers, and the lads were all going so well, I couldn't get back in, you see. And got back in 11, didn't see much game time in 12, 13 the same. We exited early to Kilkenny down in Nolan Park. And then 14, it just really kicked off for me. I don't know, Eamon O'Shea came in as manager in 13, and I started against Limerick in the first round, and we got beaten. Went down to qualifiers then, and I didn't start that match. And I came on early enough for Larry Corbett. He pulled the hamstring and went off. And then it started 2014. I was at a bit of a crossroads, really. And I was a young player to be at a crossroads. But it was kind of a thing. Look, I wasn't really making it anymore. And the spark of me coming onto the scene in 8 and 9 was well and truly gone at that stage. And So look, it's just Eamon kind of said to me at the start of the year, look, I want to make you my main man. I want to put you in here. I believe in you. So show me what you can do. And we just went at it, and I knew I had the belief then of the manager at that stage, and that he was going to back me. And it didn't work out straight away. First match again, we lost to Limerick in the first round of the championship. And I was very lucky to hold my place then after that. We played Galway in the qualifier in Turles, and I went on and I ended up getting 3-7 or something in that match. And that really just kicked me off then. It was just, the confidence was up. I believed that I was meant to be there, and just kind of never looked back then not every year was as good, but 14, 15, 16, I had great years, and that kind of cemented my place there. And we went on in 16, won the All-Ireland, and got it again in 19. So, but it was ups and downs, there were times there it did enter my head, look, this isn't for me, and I'm not going to make it there, Look, thank God there was a bit of perseverance and said go on.
But you just mentioned a passing there. We'll come back to it. Let's talk about 2019. Because obviously in all that you've won, that has to be a special year. And just to remind people, winning the All-Ireland, being the captain, player of the year, etc. How did that feel?
I felt brilliant. It was... As the year is going on, you're kind of going, look, I was captain and that was brilliant. But when you're getting kind of close to an All-Ireland final, I remember we went away in the training camp the week before the All-Ireland final, and the reality is kind of starting to get into your head that, if you win this now, this could be a big deal, And
Where was the training camp, Seamus?
Up in Carton House.
Oh, you weren't going to the Sunshine or anything like that? No, you weren't.
We went to the Sunshine at the start.
La Manga, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We actually did go at the start of the year, and it's a brilliant, brilliant week. But we just went for a weekend up to Carton House, I remember the week before the All-Ireland final. And when I came back on the Sunday morning, the whole village was turned upside down with flags and signs and all this stuff. And all my own friends were out putting up the signs and all this kind of crack. And I just said to myself, God, we better win this next week. Now I said, there's a lot of that. We need a big effort here. The dressing rooms were being painted. Everything was being done around the place. I'd say we would have won Tidy Villages that year as well.
Tidy Towns. Well, you Tidy Towns, yeah.
But and I remember just even the owners of the Rag at the time, the pub there even said, look, what do you want next week if you win the game? What do you want us to do? And I just said, look, I don't even want to talk about it really, because you're only jinxing yourself if you go into that kind of trying to organise at that stage. And I stepped away from it kind of for the week there and tried to avoid all the But it was all great. Like, it was all great excitement because, you know, I'm from a small club, like a very small parish. And like to have somebody, I suppose, as captain, or have someone on the panel is great. And then to have someone as captain, it was extra special. And just the moments after it, you know, like the Monday night coming home, we had a homecoming in Thurles in Semple Stadium, and then straight on the bus and out to my home club then. And, you know, my home house is only a couple of hundred metres there from the hurling field, and passing on the bus going down there, and my parents standing outside the front gate waving up, you know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
The stuff that just sticks in your head, like, you know. And I remember Tommy Dunn, I was sitting at the back of the bus, and Tommy Dunn just said to me, get up here to the front, hold up that cup, and we're passing here. These are memories that you'll have, you know, you need to experience this for the rest of your life, and you'll have this memory for the rest of your life. And I always just, I'll never forget him for that, because you are kind of sitting in the back, kind of trying to be a bit modest and trying, you know.
Be one of the lads,
not making it about yourself either, because, you know, everyone's day, but I suppose when you get to do it in your own parish, you know, you have to, it is kind of easier day in a way too, like, so.
You were lucky, Seamus. You were very lucky. I wasn't on the bus, because I would have been the star of Drummond Inch at that stage.
You might be giving me the cup at all.
You would have been in the rag, I'd say. Lester,
I'd say I probably would. You're dead right.
Yeah. You wouldn't have bothered coming down to the Ireland field at all. We'd have dropped you with the boat.
No. Absolutely. I mean, Seamus, just in terms of that, right? I mean, that's phenomenal in terms of, like, your memories of that and passing your parents and stuff like that as well. And like, if I take you back to the 2008 to 2014 period, right, where you're saying, you didn't know whether I should stay or should I go, right? But something changed in terms of that period from 2014 upwards then to 2023, in terms of, did you personally invest in yourself in terms of your training? I mean, to get you to another level. Obviously, you said Aidan O'Shea was put his arm around you, say, you're my man, confidence comes back, and you flourish.
Yeah. Look, I think in fairness, I think over those years, like, I transformed my body really to be able to play the position as well. Because as I said, I was a light player. Like, you know, I wasn't good in the air, you know, it was a few different things like that. And I definitely went about my training. I always train hard. I always pride myself on that. But I went about it with a kind of a man possessed nearly kind of an attitude, you know, and would have done a lot of gym work in the pre-season to get my body up to the stage that when I was going back training, I was really primed to train. So I'd say I put on, you know, probably put on 5 or 6 kg of muscle, I'd say, over that time. And it just would have been probably one that, you know, the hardest working lads in training, really, like, you know, I just would have always tried to challenge myself to be that person. And but I did a lot of work. Like, Eamon O'Shea would come and meet me, you know, in Semple Stadium or something on a Friday there at lunchtime or something like that. And we'd give an hour going through, you know, the skills of the game and shooting.
Yeah.
Different movement. And he'd hit me, like, we'd have 20 balls there and he'd be hitting me balls for an hour and I'd be running onto him and getting into different positions. And that was happening, you know, whether I'd go up to Galway, we do it in Salt Hill, where he's living in Galway. And then we might do it someday in Dublin or above in Killarwan in Clochjordan in his club. Or, you know, he invested a lot personally in my development. So
that was Seamus. That was kind of outside the team environment. Like, this is individual training yourself, a time and effort that you were putting in at this in terms of free taking, your striking ability, your goal scoring, your positional sense. Yeah, that's great to hear.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. So we were putting in that effort outside on our own, and then, you know, I was working then, sure, in my local pitch then, any chance I could get, like, whether it was at lunchtime or whatever, I was always had a bag of balls and was making sure that whether it was the freeze or whatever it was, that I was nailing them. So there was an awful lot of extra work went in. There's no point in saying that. But look, a lot of people are doing that in aspects and all. So it wasn't something just I was doing. I'm sure there's lads around, defenders were practicing something else, or, you know. But I think just to get yourself to the next level, like, you have to be doing that little bit extra outside of training. But now, look, the modern game now, like, the demands are so high, you don't get a huge chance to actually do that extra bit of work outside of training now, because, you know,
24/7 at it. Yeah.
It is, like, it is. And you do need your day. You need your day in the week where you don't do anything.
Because Did you see? I presume you did, Seamus, there during the week, Conor William Galway, talking about the fact that he feels there's too much pressure on young people, young players, on exactly the point that you just mentioned there at the moment ago. The amount of training, the amount of all commitment, etc., and so forth that's required. And let's be honest, all of you guys, like yourselves, have jobs to do outside of this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Other thing you do.
No, that's interesting when you said that, Mike, because Niall O'Mara, one of your colleagues, decided to walk away as well. And like, I think he's only 30 years of age, is it 29, 30. Do you think the demands that are there, Seamus, are like it? We've discussed this all through the summer in terms of the podcast, in terms of the compactness of the season, right? Teams are back training now, whether we like it or not. They are back training at full throttle for a league campaign, and then you have the compactness of the matches and the Munster championship campaign. I mean, they are tough matches with very little chance to recover in terms of getting an injury, or even the sports side just telling us rest and recover. You're taking a day off. Not too many fellas are getting days off at this stage, is what I gather.
Yeah, look, I think it's gone too much, and like, there's no way at my stage of my life now. Like, I'm 35 years of age. I have a job that I'm very busy with. You know, I have a lot of things going on, getting married next year. You know, just busy in life, and there's no way I could do what is expected of an intercounty hurler now. Like, and for me, it's definitely the fact that you have to be in a certain place at a certain time all the time. If this, you know, if it was a thing that like the gym session was individual and you can do it at 6:30 in the morning before you go to work, then that's, you know, you can manage that. But being, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and Sunday or something like that, from 6:00 to 9:30 or 10:00, whatever it is in the evening, you're gone. And there's no, and if you're not, you're not in. You don't have to do it.
Yeah.
And you either buy into that or not. And look, and you have to buy into it. If you're in there, you have to be honest. You can't miss anything. You have to buy into it. But I just think, and the condensed championship then, so I go back to my age. I'm 35. The Tipperary panel is evolving now, and a lot of young guys coming through. Like, back in, say, 2009, or not, you don't have to go back that far, 2014, any of these, you have 3 weeks probably between every Munster championship match. And yeah, you could have 4. So you have a chance there after a match on a Sunday to go out, whether it's have a few pints, whatever it is, go out on Sunday night and probably, well, sometimes Monday as well or whatever it is. So I'd have a chance to sit down and actually talk to a 20-year-old on the panel or a 23-year-old on the panel and get to know them. Because when you go into training, you're in there, like, you're meeting each other loads, but you're not actually having any quality time together. So I think you're going in, you're training, you're getting home, you're getting something to eat as quick as you can, and you're going home. And I think the condensed championship is taking away the actual human aspect of it, where you get to actually bond over a few drinks or whatever it is that you do. So, like, I'd be all for keeping it the way it was before, where there's a bit of a break. Like, it's not really, I don't think it's really good enough that you'd sit down there on a Sunday, you get a small hamstring tear, and your chance will be over.
Absolutely.
That's not fair. That's not fair on a player that's after going back to training at the end of October or whatever it is. Like, that one small injury that isn't even an actual property, it's not like you've done your knee or you've done something like that. It's a small injury that if you had 4 weeks, you'd be grand.
But lads, can I ask the two of you this question? We've talked about this, Tomás, over the last couple of months and all that kind of stuff. And everybody seems to be in agreement here, and Seamus has echoed it in his comments just there now, about this condensed season and so forth. The question is, can we see the GEA actually change their minds? Can we actually see a situation where they say, look, we tried an experiment, we're not sure this is working, maybe we should just go back a bit here? Or are they going to be stubborn, is the bottom line I'm asking?
No, Michael, and we mentioned it a good few times. I mean, they've not a choice but to change. I mean, you're hearing modern day players, Seamus, the guy that has just finished a very illustrious intercounty career, but you have modern day players now saying, how are we going to keep up with this, right? They're not professional sportsmen that can go to a gym on a Monday morning and do field work and go to bed and relax for the afternoon or chill out. these guys are amateur players. These guys have a job to keep down. They have a work environment. They have mortgages to pay. They've got so much else that they've got to factor into their lives, right? And like, Seamus, you probably would agree as well, because in terms of your club, right? It's now seeping from the inter-county scene down into the club scene in terms of the compactness of the season and also the demands that are on the club player as well.
Yeah.
And like, we've matches, we could have matches in February and March and stuff like that, which is a league campaign. And then you're into a Munster Championship game, Michael, and you've seen it. And Seamus, look, you've been part and parcel of this. It's hell for leather. And just why can't we just push it out to August again, to early September, and give the guys an opportunity to recover and recruit, you know, because the demands are, you mentioned, Seamus, look, the social media side of it, everything, you know, the abuse the players get off the field when a bad performance comes along, some of that. And no player deserves that. Nobody goes out to play a bad game. Everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to be the man of the match, player of the year, and some of that. But it's a high pressure situation not to be an inter-county player.
Can I ask you, Seamus, one final question, if I may, because we've taken up a fair bit of your time. And I get asked this over the last while. It was asked at the weekend. I was down doing a charity launch down in Castlebar at the weekend, and I was in, where was I? I was in Cavan, and so on. And people keep asking me, do you miss it? Meaning the Sunday game. Now, I know you're only recently retired. You're only a couple of months out of it, essentially. You know, have people started asking you yet?
Yeah, look. They have, in fairness. And like, sure, the answer is the same. Like, I wouldn't be probably back at this stage, so I have nothing to miss. Like, but you know, things like, small things, right? Sitting at home the other night, watching the All-Stars on the television. You know, you were part of that. A great night, getting to meet people across different codes, different county that you'd never meet, and actually having a bit of crack with them. Like, you know, that's just something, it just came into my head. You know, because I'll never be at that again, you know. And that was kind of like, well, that's another moment of kind of finite, you know, just it's final. You've done that part of your thing, you know. And like, I knew I was ready to go, and I'm happy having gone. But at the same time, I'll be watching a league match in February, and I'll be thinking, you know what, I'd love to be out there now this evening. But then,
yeah.
but once the match is over, you actually don't want to be out there. Do you know what I mean?
You don't.
Yeah. It's just for the 60 minutes of the game.
60 minutes or 70 minutes, yeah.
70 minutes of the game, whatever it is, you actually feel, yeah, I'd love to be still doing that. But then, like, it's the midweek thing. It's the body, and it's my age, and I've had a great time of it, and I really enjoyed it. But, you know, there's a time for everyone to ask to step away. But look, there's no doubt about it. At the moment, I can't say I miss it, but I'd be lying if I said I'm not going to miss it. I know I miss it. And in 5 years' time, I'll still miss it.
I feel Seamus exactly the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Seamus, could I just ask you one question, right? Because we mentioned about your goal scoring ratio and stuff like that. What was the greatest goal that you scored?
I'd say without a doubt, the one against Wexford in 2019 was the one I think was the greatest. It was a great game to be part of that day. And I don't think I've ever hit a ball with as nice a connection as I did as the ground strike I hit that day.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was in the sweet spot,
Yeah, it was actually one of the ones, you didn't even feel the ball hit the boss. Do you know, it just, brilliant. It made it so, there was no sound out of it or anything. It was just perfect when it hit it. And if you asked me to do it, and it gave me 100 times to do it, I'd never do it again as good. You know? But it just, whatever happened that day, it just bounced off the hurley. And it was a sweet feeling.
And drills the ball across. Niall O'Mara. Wexford don't have as many back as perhaps they could have. A Tipperary want gold, and Seamus Calvin is in around the back. Is this a number six?
Oh, what a goal!
It's a magnificent 7 goals in 7 successive games for Seamus Calvin. Wexford were caught up the field. Tipperary have got their goal.
Yeah, in the last few minutes, Tip coming back into it. Here's Niall O'Mara, long hand pass. Calvin had his mind made up, and what a rocket to the corner of the net. We don't see much of that anymore. We see Calvin absolutely connected right on the meat, and a brilliant call.
Davis, it's been so good to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for joining us here on this podcast. Congratulations on what's been an exemplary career You will look back. I'm sure you're doing it already, but you're certainly going to look back in the years to come and think to yourself, you know what? I was part of that. And that's what it's all about, I suppose, if you're lucky enough to have that opportunity and that achievement. And I suppose, like your very good self, the talent to do it as well, which can't be left out of the equation. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I know you did. Thanks again to Seamus. Tomás, as usual, thanks to you. And we'll talk to you the next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.